Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, Behavior of a Perfect Person, Text Number 43. Vikalpam juhu yachchittau tamanas yarta viprame mano vaikari ke hudva tamayayam jahotyayu ayanu. Vikalpam, discrimination between good and bad, one person and another, one nation and another, and all similar discrimination. Juhuyat, one should offer as oblations. Chitao, in the fire of consciousness. Tam, that consciousness. Manasi, in the mind. Artha viprame, the root of all acceptance and rejection. Manaha, that mind. Vaikarike, in false ego. Identification of oneself with matter. Udva, offering as oblations. Tam, this false ego. Mayam, and the total material energy. Juhoti, offers as oblations. Anu, following this principle. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The mental concoction of discrimination between good and bad should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind, which should then be invested in the false ego. False ego should be invested in the total material energy. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. Purport. This verse describes how a yogi can become free from material affection, because the material attraction, a karmi, cannot see oneself, himself. Jnanis can discriminate between matter and spirit, but the yogis, the best. Whom are the bhakti yogis, want to return home, back to Godhead. The karmis is completely an illusion. The jnanis are neither an illusion nor in positive knowledge. But the yogis, especially the bhakti yogis, are completely on the spiritual platform. It's confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Mam jayo yavicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma buyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service does not fall down under any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature, thus comes the level of Brahman. Thus the devotee's position is secure. The devotee is at once elevated to the spiritual platform. Others, such as jnanis and hatha yogis, can only gradually ascend to the spiritual platform by nullifying their material discrimination on the platform of psychology and nullifying the false ego by which one thinks, I am the body, a product of matter. One must merge the false ego into the total material energy and merge the total material energy into the supreme energetic. Thus, this is the process of becoming free from material attraction. Text again. Vikalpam jahuyat chitau tammanas yarta viprame mano vaikarike hutva tammayayam juhot yanu. The mental concoction of discrimination between good and bad should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind, which should then be invested in the false ego. The false ego should be invested in the total material energy. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatna nitya vinivritti kama dvanvar vimukha sukaduka sangar gachant yamuda padam aviyam tat. Those who are free from illusion, from false prestige, who are done with material, who have given up material lust, free from the, who understand the eternal and free from the dualities of delusion, engage themselves in my devotional service. So, in other words, there is a process of becoming free from illusion. The karmis, they're engaged in part of the process. The jnanis are engaged in another, more of the process. The yogis are engaged in the most of the process, but the complete process is engaged by the devotees, and only by the devotees. Because the first principle of getting free from illusion is getting free from the false conception that one is the proprietor of the material energy. As long as one is thinking oneself to be the proprietor of even some part of the material energy, one is put into illusion by the superior energy. As Krishna says, Daivyesha gunamayi mamamaya dharatya mameva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. This material nature, consisting of the three modes, is difficult to overcome. But those who have taken shelter of me can easily overcome, cross beyond it. In other words, the illusory energy is just as powerful as Krishna. For those who are non-devotees, the illusory energy overwhelms them from the beginning of Yastva Indra Gopa Mamahendra Sukho Maho Sukarma Bandana Rupa Bhajana Noti Sukarami Nidahati Kintu Chapakti Bhajam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhujami. From Indra, the king of heaven, all the way down to the Indra Gopa, they're all bound by their karma, by the illusory energy. Therefore, to overcome that, why we put into illusory energy? Krishna Bahir Mukha Bhagavan Chitare. That as soon as we turn our face away from Krishna, as soon as we deny Krishna's existence, Krishna Bahir Mukha, which literally means Bahira, to turn away, and Mukha, the face, Krishna Bahir Mukha, Bhogavan Chitare, and then want to enjoy the material nature. One follows another. If we're not in Krishna consciousness, then we'll be in material consciousness. And if we're in material consciousness, then we'll have material desires. Whether it be for gross or subtle sense gratification, up to the point of merging in Brahman, these are all considered material desires. Nikatastha, because Maya is standing right next to us. As Krishna is in our heart, so Maya is next to us. Nikatastha tari japati dari. And as soon as Maya sees that we turn our face away from Krishna, we forget Krishna, we deny Krishna, basically we just forget him, then Krishna, Maya slaps us into the material existence, into material consciousness. Japatiya dare. And then we identify ourselves with these gross and subtle bodies, and we're put into various forms of life and different types of consciousness. Therefore, the first principle is Krishna is the proprietor of everything. And if we accept that Krishna is the proprietor of everything, then at least the delusion that we're the proprietor of the material energy will gradually dissipate. That is, if we actually begin to utilize our energies in Krishna's service rather than the energies of the material conceptions that we have. Material conceptions are basically based upon this is I and this is mine. I am this body and these things belong to me. My body is from this place or that place. I'm male or female. I'm black or white. And I belong to this country, that country. These are all upadis, false egos. false identification. Then, due to that false identification, we get false affection. We believe, we love our country. We love our family. We love ourselves, this body. These are all material affections. And based upon those material affections, we're engaged in so many material activities. Now, of course, in Krishna consciousness, it doesn't mean we end activities. We don't stop serving our family or serving even our nation or our community. But we serve these in relation to Krishna. Because actually, in the material concept, we think it's my family. And in the spiritual conception, we think it's Krishna's family. In the material conception, I think I am the body. And in the spiritual conception, we think it's Krishna's body. Just like as I pointed out, Sanatana Goswami, he was suffering from wet sores, and therefore when he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would embrace him. But Sanatana Goswami became very disturbed that he's offending Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore he was determined to commit suicide by placing himself under the wheels of the Jagannath cart during the Rath Yatra ceremony. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being omniscient, he told Sanatana Goswami that this is not a good idea. That Haridasa Thakura was also present at that time. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my dear Haridasa Thakura, here is a devotee, Sanatana Goswami. I have so many plans for his body to be utilized for excavating different holy places in Vrindavan, writing books about devotional service. And yet he's planning to destroy his body that belongs to me. Actually, the body belongs to God, to Krishna, not to Sanatana Goswami. But he wants to misuse it by committing suicide. So Sanatana Goswami realized that, of course, he understood that Lord Chaitanya is omniscient, and he gave up that determination. Realizing that this body, although it may be temporary, still it's the property of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Krishna. And one should utilize it for his service. Not for one's sense gratification, of which sense, even committing suicide is a form of sense gratification, satisfying the false ego. So the difference between material activities and spiritual activities is that spiritual activities are done to please Krishna under the direction of his representatives. And material activities are done whimsically according to the dictation of the senses and the mind, lust, anger, greed, delusion, envy, madness, etc. If a devotee wants to become free from these things, then the first step is to understand, I'm not this body, and therefore I'm not the doer of the activities, and that everything here that I'm identifying myself as mine actually belongs to Krishna. And I should find out from Krishna and his representatives what he wants me to do with anything I have influence over, and then do that specifically to try to please him and his representatives. Then the result is that one will become conscious, Krishna will reveal himself, and that one will become conscious of Krishna. So as mentioned in this verse, this idea of merging, obviously we have no power to merge anything. We have no control over the material energy, nor do we really have at the present time much control of the spiritual energy. So the karmis, we could say they merged their activities out of duty into the material energy, but they don't necessarily merge their consciousness. They still identify themselves erroneously with their body, thinking I'm a Brahmin, I'm a Kshatriya, I'm a Vaishya Shudra, and I should do these duties. Well, that's certainly better than neglecting one's duty and acting just independently without any conception of what actually I'm supposed to do. So at least for the karmis who follow their duty, there's some recognition that Vishnu, Yajnavai Vishnu, if one does not even have the conception of Yajnavai Vishnu, I should sacrifice for Vishnu, I should do my duty and not do anyone else's duty, then one is simply an animal, simply following whimsically their senses. And for them, according to Bhagavad Gita, they'll neither have peace nor happiness nor the supreme destination. So, if one dutifully does his activities, then he may rise up in the course of time to the position of a jnani. Some, as by purification, one may understand, actually I'm not this body, I'm a spiritual being. And then begin to cultivate real knowledge, not academic knowledge, not book knowledge, but real knowledge of the self, that I'm eternal, and I'm an eternal servant of Vishnu. I'm not only doing my activities to serve him out of duty, but I'm doing them because that's my position, to serve Krishna or Vishnu. And the perfect jnani, brahma yata janatiti brahmanaha, realizes I'm eternal servant of Krishna, and then by good association, he may take up pure devotional service and become a bhakti yogi. So the karma merges his activities by proper consciousness, by proper duty, and the jnani merges his part of his false ego by giving up the conception that I am this body. Although he doesn't know who he is, so his false, he still is controlled by the false ego and the mode of ignorance, because he doesn't really know what his real identity is. And therefore his activities are not done to please Vishnu, which is his real position, but they're done to get out of the material energy into the spiritual energy, into Brahman. So he's given up the material false ego to some degree, but due to ignorance, he can't give up. He's still under the control of the false ego and ignorance, thinking himself to be something other than Krishna's servant. So there's also another kind of merging part of the false ego. And then finally, when one accepts that I'm the eternal servant of the servant of Krishna, then one has actually merged his false ego into the material, external energy, and enters into the spiritual energy. To whatever extent, one gives up the false ego and identifies oneself as the servant of the servant of Krishna, then one becomes situated in the spiritual platform, free from the false ego, which doesn't affect one anymore. In other words, the false ego actually disappears for the pure devotee, just like if you eat a meal, it gets digested by a strong fire of digestion and disappears into the body. It doesn't disappear. If I give up my false ego, don't worry, there'll still be enough false ego to go around. It doesn't disappear. It doesn't all merge, as some of the Mayavadis may think. When I give up my false ego, I become Brahman. I become God. Again, so we should be cautious and careful that we don't, if we find ourselves having affection for this body, then we should realize there's something wrong. It's not that, you know, I identify myself with the body, and it's just natural. Everyone loves their body. Or if I love things in relation to the body. Now, it is not that we give up our family, or we give up love, but what goes on the name of love in the material world is actually lust, kama priti. That real love is love for Krishna. And if we love Krishna, then we'll actually love others, including the family members. And if we don't love Krishna, we won't love anyone, actually, except for we'll be loving, maybe, to some extent, the material energy, which goes under the name of love, but actual real love is for Krishna. We can't even really love ourselves unless we love Krishna, because we don't know who we are unless we love Krishna. And therefore we can't even act for our real interest unless we act for Krishna. So the idea that if we become devotees of Krishna and love Krishna, then we have no affection or love for our family, but actually our love for our family and for others, even outside of the family, for all living entities, will increase exponentially, unlimitedly, and become the same as our love for Krishna. When Krishna expanded himself into so many cowherd boys and so many calves, then when Brahma stole the original cowherd boys and calves, Then, immediately, the original cow's mothers, or calves mothers, the cows, and the cowherd ladies who were the mothers of the cowherd boys, they all developed love for their sons and for the calves on the same level as Krishna. So Krishna always has to be the center of attraction. And even we love others, we only can love others in relation to Krishna. And if Krishna is the center, then our love for everyone will, as our love for Krishna increases, then our love for everyone else will increase also. And if Krishna is not the center, then sometimes we take one body as a dog, and we love our family as a dog, and sometimes we take birth as a demigod, and we love our demigod family. And sometimes we take birth as a human being and identify ourselves with that family. But after we leave, all these identifications are lost. When Chitraketu, he wanted a son, and he had 10 million wives. But none of the wives could give him a child. And I guess he was getting a little tired after some time. So Narada Muni and Parvati Muni came, and Sora the king was a little morose and said, "What can I do for you?" Narada Muni said, "Well, you know, I have 10 million wives and I need a son to rule the kingdom, and none of them can provide a son for me." So then Narada Muni said, "Well, I can give you a son, but he'll be Harsha Marsha. That is, he'll give you great happiness and great distress." "No problem, at least we've got a son." So it was arranged that Kayadu, his wife, got some potion. She was able to conceive a son. The whole kingdom was very happy, except for the other 9,999,999 wives. They became greatly unhappy. That formerly the king, he didn't have much attention for any of us, but now he has no attention for us. He only has one attention for this one queen and her son, and we're all being neglected. So they got together and they decided the best way of solving a problem is to kill the little child, and then he'll spread his attention over the other 9,990,999 otherwise. So that's what they did. They poisoned the little child, and there was great disturbance in the kingdom. The king was fainted. The king's wife fainted. Everyone was greatly morose. And then Narada Muni and Parvati appeared again and said, Angira appeared and said, "You know, what's the problem?" He said, "My child has died, and you know what to do." So Narada Muni brought the child back to life. And the little child said, and Narada Muni said, "Your mother and father, they're greatly disturbed that you've died. You know, come back." The child said, "What? Which father, mother? I've had so many fathers and mothers. Which one are you talking about?" "Oh, you know, the one. Chitraketu." "Oh, that one. Yeah, in the previous life, I was his enemy. And we had in a battle, he killed me. And I vowed I'd come back and make him suffer. So I think I've achieved my purpose. And now I think I have some other place to go. Goodbye." So we're thinking we love someone, or, you know, this is my whole object of love should be focused on this. And it may be the person purposely comes back in our family just to cause us pain, for all we know. So this artificial affection can only be given up if one gets a superior taste and actually becomes conscious of Krishna. Otherwise, we have to love someone. If we don't love Krishna, we'll love something insignificant. Itevidu swarthikatim hi vishnu durashya ye bahir artamanina. So we have to choose what to love. Either love Krishna or love some part of the material energy. And as it says here, whether it's the good part of the material energy or the bad part of the material energy, it's still material energy. As we know, in India, they have different conceptions of what stool is. We may not know that, but for those who don't. In India, previously, and perhaps still, those who live in the country, they pass stool in the field. And there's some opinion, as there's always one side or another side or many sides to a story, some who pass stool in the field, they believe that the part that the sun bakes is good, and the part that stays wet is bad. And others have another opinion, that this part that the sun bakes is bad, but the wet part is good. And since time immemorial, they've been arguing over which part of the stool is good, the wet part or the dry part. But after all, the subject matter is stool. And whoever is right makes no difference, because it's not a very either sattvic or transcendental subject matter to discuss. Therefore, this idea, this is good and this is bad, there is good and bad in the material world in terms of higher and lower. Sattva-gun is certainly higher than Rajagun or Tamagun, because by Sattva-gun, as it says in the Bhagavatam, one can, by further investigation, study, and good association, come to a higher platform of consciousness and realize the absolute truth. Just like within wood is invested fire. But you have to have a mechanism to bring the fire out. And when the fire comes out and blazes, then it burns the wood. So certainly in the mode of ignorance and passion, where the potential for fire is there in the wood, but it's not blazing, maybe there's a little smoke and passion and completely no fire in ignorance. But as one starts to light the fire in sattva guna, then the fire can be made to come out in blazing light, in pure goodness, and will burn to ashes the dull wood. So certainly sattva guna may be superior to ignorance and passion, but without putting it on blaze, the fire of sattva guna, and bringing it to pure goodness, it itself also simply remains dull and not very completely auspicious. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yes?
Guru, I would like to ask about those Brahma levels. How you can achieve them? What would be the best way for the Shudras?
To achieve Brahman.
Yeah, Brahman, yeah.
Paramatma, Bhagavan. That's the different levels of Brahman. I mean, everything is actually Brahman.
Okay.
There is Anamaya, there's Pranamaya, there's Manamaya, there is Vijnanamaya, and then there's Anandamaya, Anandamaya. So these are different phases of consciousness. But beyond that, Anandamaya or Vijnanamaya is Brahman realization, that I'm not this body. And above that is Paramatma realization, that I'm the servant of Paramatma. He's the controller. And then the ultimate realization is Anandamaya, that I am actually the eternal servant of Krishna. How to achieve it? Devotional service. Nine different processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. Hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, remembering Krishna, etc. And that's the process of doing that.
So keeping the ordinary life and putting more time into devotion. So working what you do and then...
Working what you do and do it as a service to Krishna. Give the results to Krishna. And at the same time perform sadhana bhakti, the process by which we can always remember Krishna and never forget him.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Krantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.